trail of bodybuilding, and it's one of the hardest goals to actually achieve, no matter how experienced you may be at this game. Of course, I'm talking about finally getting down to low enough body fat levels where you can actually carve out a shredded set of six-pack abs. Now, why, if the magazine articles and the websites promise you that it's going to be easy to accomplish this feat in record time, and it's so simple that Homer Simpson can do it while still eating donuts and drinking Duff beer, then why isn't everyone walking around sporting a washboard midsection? Well, that's what we're going to be discussing in this session of Underground Bodybuilding Secrets, as I interview someone who has no problem dispelling the myths about what it really takes to blast away body fat once and for all and create the body of your dreams. Hi, everyone. This is the Muscle Nerd Jeff Anders with another session of Underground Bodybuilding Secrets, and I'd like you to help me welcome to the program Mike Geary, author of the international best-selling Truth About Abs program. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Jeff.
We got a lot of stuff to cover tonight, and, you know, few people in our industry are more well-known as Mike when it comes to specifically targeting your abs for training and fat loss. He's literally helped tens of thousands of men and women from over 100 countries lose weight and finally burn off that ugly belly fat once and for all. His articles have been published in over 1,000 fitness websites around the world and even in the popular Muscle and Fitness magazine. Mike is a certified nutrition specialist and a certified personal trainer who's dedicated himself to research and development of only the most up-to-date and innovative weight loss training strategies, as well as nutrition, and has made it his personal mission to pass on this cutting-edge information to his clients and readers. But the reason why I'm such a big fan of Mike's is that he truly believes that establishing healthy eating and training habits is more than just having six-pack abs. It's about improving the quality of your life, and he actually lives the same training and dietary guidelines he preaches in his training. Now, if you want more information about Mike and his training, all you have to do is go to his bio page on our site at undergroundbodybuildingtips.com. You'll get everything you need to know there, some of Mike's articles, as well as information about his program. So I strongly suggest you go over and do that. Now, if you are joining us live, you can go ahead and click on the button on this page here, and that'll also take you over to Mike's information as well. Now, Mike, like I said, I put out a call for questions yesterday, and we just got flooded with a bunch of people. And a lot of the questions were kind of ones that I expected, but some that I really wasn't. And this really seems to be a very kind of mysterious segment of the market. And, you know, I imagine that's what you were zeroing in on when you were developing the Truth About Abs program. Why, just in your opinion, why do you think that actually getting down, why has it become so mysterious and so elusive to actually get down to low enough body fat levels where you can actually see your abs when, like I said before, I mean, so many websites and so many magazine articles, you look in the bodybuilding magazines, make it seem like it's so simple. Just pop this pill or do this four-week program and boom, there you go.
Well, yeah, I think that one of the biggest problems is that there is so much conflicting information out there, and everybody's, you know, telling you, well, basically, you got to follow the money, and you know everybody's trying to sell. You know, if it's the infomercials, they're trying to sell their their latest ad gadget. If it's the supplement companies, they're trying to sell their latest fat burning pill. And so everybody's going to tell you, well, this is the magic. You know, this is the magical solution to getting your body fat low enough to see abs. And well, unfortunately, a lot of them don't even really focus on that. They just say that, well, you pump away with this ab exercise, or you use this ab gadget, or you take this, you know, your abs are just going to magically appear. And obviously, it's, you know, there's a lot more to the equation than that. I mean, we need to focus on our training programs as a whole. How are you training your entire body to keep, you know, to maximize your metabolism, to build lean muscle throughout your entire body? And I think we'll delve into that today.
Yeah, definitely, because we got some questions that I think it seems like a lot of people have really bought into some of those myths that were out there about how to actually, quote-unquote, target your midsection. So we're going to go into a lot of that. I always like to let the subscribers and our members really kind of feed the questions out, because I want to get what they're looking for is information. I want to get them their answer. So here are some of the ones that kind of came in. Sarah from Pincor, I want to start with hers because I think this is pretty typical for people that are really trying to get down to what it really takes to get to washboard midsection. Sarah from Pincor says, "Hi, Mike. My body seems to not want to go below a certain weight. when I get there, although I know there's still too much body fat left, it just seems impossible to get lower. Any tips on tricking it past this sticking point? And I thought this was an important question because what I think a lot of people that actually try to accomplish what we're talking about here, you know, what happens is they get to a certain point and then their body kind of rebels or whatever, and it seems like they really do hit a quote-unquote sticking point or a plateau or whatever it may be. You know, answering Sarah's question, what should somebody do when they reach that wall and it seems like nothing else is coming off?
Sure. Well, actually, I've got a couple things. A couple will be training-related and a couple nutrition-related. Now, one thing, it depends on how they've been working out. Now, a lot of people will, you know, if they've got a lot of weight to lose at first, a lot of times, you know, just doing anything, you know, changing something in their life, doing more cardio, you know, starting to do some weight training if they've never done much before, you know, just cutting out a couple things like, you know, stop drinking soda, you know, stop eating cereal, things like that, might be enough to, you know, lose that first 30 or 40 pounds. But then you get to a point where, all right, you've been training, your body's getting used to exercise, you know, you still kind of haven't gone to the next level with your nutrition, and so your body stalls out. And how do you get to that next level? You know, a lot of times guys will stall out around 14-15% body fat, somewhere around there. You know, girls will stall out somewhere in the low 20s. So getting to that next level, you know, does take some changes to both your training and your nutrition. One thing that I can, you know, say is taking your training to a new intensity level. So if you've only been doing just regular cardio, well, now just take your intensity to a whole new level and try and incorporate sprinting into your, you know, a lot of people, you got to be careful, you know, if you're not already in good shape, your body might not be able to handle sprinting, and any sprinting workout, you definitely want to warm up properly for and ease into it. But that is an example of a way where you're really taking your intensity to a new level. You're working muscles in your body a lot harder than they've ever, you know, been used to being worked before. And, you know, you're stimulating some fat burning and muscle building hormones. So there's a lot of things going on. And you can do the same thing with weight training. I mean, if you say you've just been doing, you've been going around doing sets where you, we call them straight sets instead of like supersets, where you do a set of an exercise, maybe you rest a minute or two, you do another set of an exercise. So there's a certain intensity involved in your workout there. Let's say your workout's 45 minutes long. Well, how much work did you actually accomplish in that 45 minutes? Well, if you had, you know, two or three minutes of rest in between each set doing straight sets, you can really only squeeze a certain amount of work in there. But now let's take the intensity to a new level, and maybe you alternate opposing muscle groups in like a superset fashion or whatever you want to call it. People use different terms.
Yeah.
And now you're squeezing more intensity into that same time period, because while one muscle group is resting, you're working another muscle group. And, you know, in that same time period, you've actually accomplished more work. So those are a couple examples of sort of taking your workouts to a new intensity level to kind of stimulate your body to get to that next level if you've hit a plateau. Another thing I can think of, as she mentioned, you know, kind of tricking your body past that sticking point. In terms of nutrition, one thing I see a lot of times that after a while, people, if they've been restricting for too long, if they've been trying to eat really well and really clean and they sort of feels restrictive, your body will kind of rebel after a while, and you will hit a plateau where you've been trying to go too low calorie, you know, maybe you're just trying to restrict too much. So having, you know, that cheat day or cheat meal, you know, once a week, I think can really help. Because one thing I've used in the past is to, you know, really like, not, I don't really do it for a full day, but at least one or two meals a week, I'll really go like super high carb. I mean, just, you know, eat a lot more carbohydrates than I'm used to. And it stimulates a big insulin response and a subsequent leptin response, which increases your metabolism. So it's sort of like tricking your body into thinking, well, that food's plentiful again. We can increase our metabolism again. And, you know, and it doesn't think that it's starving, and which may have been one reason why it plateaued. So those are a couple ideas and examples.
Yeah, a lot of adaptation there, and from what I hear you saying, you know, really giving it something else to, you're you know, throwing a curveball at your body, whether it's training-wise or whether it's throwing something different at it nutrition-wise, could be enough to jumpstart it out. You know,
yeah.
You brought up kind of in the beginning of that a lot of people stall out about the 14 to 15% range. I think one of the early questions to add in here for those people that are maybe thinking about, you know, they're looking at their body in the mirror and they're wondering, you know, they see in the magazine what they want to look like, and they're wondering, I mean, hopefully they've taken the plunge and actually gone to the extent of actually measuring their body fat percentage, which I think, even if you're not trying to lose body fat, even if your goal is to build muscle, I think you've got, if you're serious about training at all, you've got to measure your body fat levels to be able to judge what exactly is happening in your body, whether it's, you know, the gain of lean mass and the loss of fat. So for those people that really do want to get down to super low levels, from your experience, at what percentage level? Because I've got a question here. It's actually from Lisa from Xenia, and I don't know, that might be some island out in the middle of the Pacific that I've never ever heard of. But Lisa asked, at about what percentage of body fat will a female show abs? And there is a difference between body fat for men and women, but from your experience, what's that goal that people are looking at where they can finally breathe a sigh of relief when they started out at maybe 30% body fat? At what percentage level will they start to see maybe an outline of their abs?
Yeah, well, a good point to make here is that everybody's body fat distribution is different. So where one person might show, you know, like, let's say guys, for example, like one guy might be showing, you know, his abs are starting to really come out at 8% body fat, and another guy, you know, it might be 10% body fat, or even, you know, some guys might even have to get lower, you know, 6 or 7% body fat for them really to you know, get the bottom abs to show. For women, from what I've seen, 16 to 18% is usually a good target. I'd actually be wary of going too low. I've seen some women 13, 14% body fat, and sometimes it starts to get a little scary. It can be a little unhealthy to go too low. And guys, generally 8 to 10% body fat, you're going to really start to see your abs well. If you get down to like 7% or under, I mean, you're going to be pretty ripped. So those are some general numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. And the, you know, one of the things that kind of goes along with this whole I want to see my abs thing is, you know, let's start with some of the myths that are out there. Because probably the biggest one out there is the build and burn myth, and you typically see this in bodybuilding magazines where, you know, it's usually for a fat burning supplement, and it'll show somebody at about 3 to 4% body fat, and they somehow manage to gain a whole bunch of muscle in the process of getting down to 3 to 4% body fat. man, I wish that pill were really out there, but Will from Ackworth, Georgia. Just basically, I mean, he sums it all up in this question. Is it possible to build mass and burn fat at the same time? Seems like when I eat for mass, the most effective mass building occurs around my waist. you know, people have been so programmed, us guys particularly, that build muscle, burn fat, get shredded. In your opinion, I mean, what's the practicality of that? And, you know, go ahead and just have at it and just take it on.
Sure. Well, from what I've seen, it is possible to build muscle and lose fat at the same time, but I've only really seen this in real life in beginners. And, you know, people that have just been sedentary, and now they start working out, they start doing resistance training, and they're building muscle, but at the same time, you know, they just had so much body fat, they're losing fat also. When you get to the real world with people that have been used to training for years, it's very hard to actually build muscle and lose fat at the same time. Now, I usually recommend, you know, taking it in cycles. So, and usually, you know, I like to correspond it to a time of the year. So, if in wintertime, It's a good opportunity that, well, you're not really going to be at the beach that much. Or you're not really worried as much, you know, of your exact body fat percentage, you know, to make sure your abs are showing perfect. But so maybe that's the opportunity you take to make sure you have a caloric surplus and you're training hard and heavy and you're going to focus that period of time on building muscle. And then, you know, spring's coming or summer's here and you're, you know, maybe you focus that period of time on losing body fat and making sure you're getting those, you know, getting that body fat down low enough to see abs visibly and maintain that. And so that's, you know, if you think about it, it's really tough to gain muscle and not gain a little bit of fat because you'd really have to be absolutely perfect with your caloric intake, and almost nobody's going to be that. Because there's going to be a certain level where, all right, at this point in time, you've always got to think, your body is programmed at any given point in time. However, there's a certain caloric need that you have to just maintain that same weight. And every, you know, every time you gain a little bit of weight or lose a little bit of weight, that number changes. So, like for me, I generally, you know, I'm about 3,000 calories a day to maintain my weight. But if I gain 10 pounds, well now, I, you know, it might be 3,200 calories per day. It's going to be slightly different. And vice versa, if I, you know, if I lose 10 pounds, it's going to be slightly different. Now I'm going to be expending less calories. So you always have to think about the dynamics there. So that's why I say it's almost impossible to get the exact equation right, and it's too hard to try and figure it out, so don't. Just know that if you're going to try and take a period of time to gain muscle, you know, you're going to need a caloric surplus, and it's not going to be perfect, and you're going to gain a little extra fat as well. But you can still stay relatively lean. And then, you know, when you need to lose body fat, you're going to need a caloric deficit. And, you know, again, it's trying to, at this point, it's trying not to go too extreme to where you lose a lot of that muscle mass that you gained, because you want to maintain that lean muscle, because that keeps your, you know, that's basically the fire for your metabolism, is how much lean muscle you carry, is, you know, one of the exact, or I should say the direct correlations with how much calories you're going to burn on a daily basis. So I think that's a good way to put it, is that, you know, take it in different goals and different times of the year, and don't really try and do it all at the same time.
Yeah, a lot of people don't really, few people, I think, take a step back and look at their calendar and look at cycling their training. And, I mean, this site is about bodybuilding. So the people that are typically members here are ones that are, they're really looking to craft a specific body. And I like your, I mean, I cycle my training as well, and I'm glad you brought that up about the need to look back and see, okay, when do you want to look your best? I mean, professional athletes do this. They peak out during their season, and the rest of the year is really built around peaking out at a certain time point. I mean, look at pro bodybuilders do the exact same thing.
Yep.
I mean, if you could see these guys in the off season, they look pregnant, for crying out loud. So, you know, because they're trying to do just like you said, they're not too worried about gaining body fat in the off season because they want to add the muscle. And then they know when their contest season comes and when they're going to be taking the photos for the magazines and then strip off the body fat for those time periods. And, you know, I like the cycling method there and really making sure, because would you agree? I mean, it looks like people try to do this a little bit too quickly. I mean, what are some of the challenges there with trying to do this too quickly, and what are some of the roadblocks that people can come up against if they really try and do, you know, like you said, cut calories too soon or too much in a day, or take their training too much, you know, too high of a level, maybe trying to do it and too intensely following that magazine article or whatever.
Yeah, well, if you're trying to cut calories too drastically and lose fat too fast, like I said, you're gonna run into the problem that you're going to lose muscle also. And every time, I mean, it's a good point, because you do have to maintain a certain training intensity and resistance level to try and maintain your muscle when you're, I mean, I'd say one of the biggest goals when you're losing fat is to try and maintain your lean muscle. If you're losing muscle, it's going to start making things harder. And the more muscle you lose, the harder it's going to be to lose fat. So I found, you know, with a lot of my clients over the years and myself personally, I mean, you know, I'm 32 now and probably been training since I was 15. So, you know, almost got two decades of experience under my belt with trying, you know, a million different programs. I'm sure you're the same way. But what I found is that even at periods of the time when I was trying to, like, build a lot of muscle and overeat, that the more muscle I built, it was actually easier for me to, like, it was easier for me to stay lean. And it was almost like the more I tried to build muscle, my body would just rebel against putting on fat. I don't know. It was a little example there.
That makes a lot of sense because, I mean, you've already brought up some of the hormonal changes that happen. And you know what, Mike? Few people that have fat loss programs out there ever even bring up the hormones beyond things like testosterone. And, you know, the whole chemical soup that happens in your body as a result of the changes that you put it through, whether dietary or whether training-wise. But, you know, so what you just said makes perfect sense because, I mean, now people are starting to become more educated about the factor of muscle and fat burning.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, going through that process of trying to build muscle really starts, you know, jacking up those hormones like growth hormone, like testosterone. You know, some of those we call them, you know, anabolic hormones that come in there that are muscle building / fat burning. They kind of have a dual
effect
there.
And another point that you just reminded me of is that the harder you train your muscles with weight training, with sprint training, with these types of high intensity forms of training, your muscles' ability to process, you know, to process the carbohydrates you're eating, blood sugar, all of the, you know, all this stuff, it's like you compare somebody that trains intensely with resistance training and somebody who either is sedentary or only does cardio-based training. And that person that uses high-intensity training and resistance training is going to be able to process carbohydrates easier. And because, you know, if you think about it, you're expending, every time you train that way, your body is depleting muscle glycogen. And now it, like, wants to fill it back up. And your body knows that it needs to do that. And so you can get away with eating more in general. It's just something to think about. I mean, I know it's pretty powerful when you train regularly hard. You can definitely, not just the calories that you're expending, but you can definitely eat more in general than a sedentary person or just someone who trains lightly.
Yeah, great point. You know, we've brought up the word training here quite a bit, just in the early stages here. And, of course, I probably got about 50% training questions and 50% dietary questions. Just as a general, I mean, where do you place the importance for, you know, things like, diet versus training? When you're working with people, do you find, which area do you find that they need the most help with? Are they not training correctly, or do you think that they're not eating correctly?
I, to be honest, I think it's both 50-50, but if I had to pick one, it's a little more towards the nutrition side. I'd say there's more confusion than ever out there about nutrition. But, I mean, these days, a lot of people, if they've read anything, they've kind of got the basics, you know. They know they need to weight train. They know, you know, about multi-joint exercises and, and they've read all about cardio and interval training. And so, but with nutrition, I mean, it's a little more, there's a lot more confusion out there. And I'd say it's getting the nutrition right is probably a little bit more important, but obviously they're both important.
Yeah. Well, then let's go ahead and start with the nutrition side of it with some of the questions that were submitted here. Let's see. This is kind of a long one. I'll try to summarize this in some way, but it's Fernando from Palma de Mallorca, Spain. Says, hi, I don't want to lose more weight as I know I'm fine with the weight I have now. It's the lowest it's been in years. However, I do need to get rid of extra fat, as usual, in the chest and belly areas. What I think I need to do is lose that fat and turn that weight into muscle. So basically I'd keep the same weight or maybe gain a little but with no extra fat in these areas. So my question is, what should exactly be my approach in terms of dieting. From what I read all around, proteins are very important to help burn fat. I know that, of course, a balance between fats, carbs, and proteins is good, but should I pay more attention to proteins? If that's so, which foods in particular are good for this? Should I get my protein dose from there's some other kind of some good questions. You know, there's a good follow-on question here, but let's go ahead and talk about that because, like you said, probably a lot of the confusion out there about what to eat really centers around ratios of nutrition. You know, should you go low carb? Should you go moderate carb? Protein is a thermogenic nutrient, so should you do high protein? Or I think that's where it seems like a lot of the confusion comes in, probably particularly in the low carb. Like, how low carb do you need to go? Now, Fernando here is focused more on protein and how much protein you should be getting in. So when it comes to the balancing of nutrients and when you're planning a diet, for example, I mean, I'm not going to expect you to answer this, but along with this, John from Lumo, probably butchered that one, North South Wales, Australia, says, Mike, can you please tell me what you would specifically eat on a normal day each week in order to stay lean? What do you have for breakfast, snack, lunch, snack, dinner, and late snack? Do you have a cheat day, blah, blah, blah. But let me kind of combine those and saying when it comes to how you plan out your diet when you're trying to train down to get to this level and you're in that part of your cycle, what's your perspective on the nutrient ratios and the whole thing with carbs and protein?
Yeah, well, all right, so I'll try and give a good there's a lot of questions there, so I'll try and give a good a synopsis. But basically, I think balance is important. I don't think going too low on any macronutrient is worthwhile. If you know, going too low in carbs, going too low in fat. I mean, for example, if you go too low in fat, you know, it's proven that you'll be a hormonal mess. I mean, you're going to lower your testosterone levels. There's a lot of problems that go along with going too low in fat, and going too low in carbs, you know, there can be more problems with that too. Again, it's hard to maintain muscle when you're really low in carbs. Your muscle glycogen is going to be low. You can have mood problems. You could feel lethargic. So I like balance. Again, I don't like to go to any extremes. I will say protein is important. It does have the highest thermogenic effect when you're digesting your food. Now, another thing is, okay, so in terms of carbohydrates, if you're trying to lose body fat, get leaner, one of the tricks I like to use is to get most of my carbohydrates post-workout. So you finished a hard workout, your body's in need of to replenish muscle glycogen, that's when I'll load in most of my carbs for the day. You know, but I'll have a little bit. I'll have a nice little balance maybe in I work out late in the day. So I'll have a nice little balance in the morning, you know, early afternoon, just a small amount. And then post-workout I'll have the most. And then later at night, like my dinner and maybe a snack before I go to bed, they're going to be really low in carbs. Like, usually this really works great, from what I've seen with my clients and myself in the past when I'm trying to get leaner during different cycles, is focusing later in the day, like your dinners, with just, just protein and vegetables. You know, I usually have a form of protein, maybe a mixed salad and some like steamed veggies or something like that. And, I don't really feel the need to have a big pile of rice or a big pile of pasta or whatever for my dinners. And, with meats, I mean, geez, I could talk about nutrition for hours, but with meats, again, there's the problem I see, you know, is with most grocery store meats are not, you know, always the healthiest. So I like to make sure I get top quality when I get my meats. I mean, when I get beef, I get organic grass-fed beef. Wherever I am, I try and find local farms to buy from. Things like if I'm buying from the grocery store, I try and go to more of a health food store, get really quality meats.
Now, why is that important? I know you and I talked about this when we met down in Florida, and this was one of the things that, you know, really stuck out with me about you, because it was beyond the get ripped and shredded. It was really, like I said, I mean, one of the things that really struck me was your focus on developing healthy nutritional habits and things like that. So it does go beyond just the six-pack abs. And so you bring out, like, organic grass-fed beef, you know, local farms, organic produce, things like that. Why? Why should, I mean, especially now with, I mean, gas prices suck. And, you know, today my wife came home from, you know, fuming from the grocery store. We just got back from Mexico, and she went and bought a whole bunch of groceries. She's like, can you believe this? It's like $5.30 for a gallon of milk. And, you know, everything is skyrocketing now. And I think a lot of people are afraid that if they see the word organic, they're, you know, it's like a vampire in garlic, because the impression is that it's not worth the money. It's not, you know, it's too expensive to do this. Explain to me why you think it's important for, you know, for like grass-fed beef and for organic meats and vegetables and stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, basically, if you're saying it's not worth it, like, and you're saying, you know, is your health not worth it? You know, I mean, what you put in your body is the building blocks of you and your future. So getting back to your question about meat and why I choose, you know, why I shy away from typical grocery store meat, is if you think about it, okay, eating meat can be inherently healthy, and I know a lot of the vegetarians are going to be yelling at me right now, but is, you know, it can be inherently healthy for us if the animal is healthy. Now, so that's where I agree with the vegetarians, is that eating meat, can, you know, a lot of times is not healthy because of the way the animals are raised. And unfortunately, commercial factory farms, you know, the animals aren't raised on the type of food they were meant to eat. You know, we already talked about the example of beef or bison, or, you know, buffalo. They're not meant to eat piles of soybean and corn. They're meant to graze around all day long and eat grass and clover and alfalfa, things like that. So that drastically changes the nutritional makeup of the meat. So, you know, you hear a lot about how the, you know, the grass-fed meats, the beef and the bison, and when they're grass-fed, they have a lot higher ratios of omega-3 fats to inflammatory omega-6 fats, and they have higher levels of conjugated linoleic acid, CLA. And there's a lot of things that are going on that is just a lot more healthy when you're eating a healthy animal as opposed to an animal that wasn't brought up right. And, you know, this goes into, you know, the antibiotics and the hormones and other things that they're given as well. And if the feed they were given was, you know, had a lot of pesticides on it and all kinds of things like that. But if you just get back to simplicity and common sense, you know, the products you're eating from a healthy animal are going to be better for you. And it goes with eggs, it goes with meat, it goes with milk, you know, any animal products that we're referring to with, you know, when we're talking about protein in our diets.
Yeah, you know, I really started, I mean, because it's one of those things that for a lot of people it's more faith-based, you know, because they don't, it's not like you eat an organic, you know, bunch of spinach and, wow, I can't believe the difference. You know, it's not like you're going to grow Popeye muscles and stuff. So for a lot of people it's like, well, if they don't have an immediate gratification from it, why pay the extra money for it? And I really started listening to my friend and mentor, Dr. Michael Colgan, who is just a huge advocate for going organic and a lot of the things that you just said. And it's one of those things that once you learn to budget that in, it becomes part of your monthly budget. You can do it when you start to take place your health as a priority. You know, Mike, I've got a kind of a story here to share with you because, you know, yesterday I got back from 2 weeks in Mexico. We always go out to, we've got this secret place in Mexico. It's kind of a real remote area. It's an old Mexican town, a very, very, very cool spot. And we took the kids there this time, and they're still alive. I managed to get back from vacation, and they're still alive. And when we were out there, one of the things that they noticed was that the cows, they're like, wow, all those cows are so skinny. I was like, no, you're used to seeing these, you know, genetically produced bioengineered cows that they stuff, out of these farms. So this is what you're used to seeing, but what you're seeing out here are normal grass-fed cows that graze all day long. And this is what typically cows used to look like. And the other thing that happened when we were out there, my wife and I got in this conversation with a woman who was actually studying nutrition in Mexico and in the United States. And she was a huge advocate for organic. And we started talking to her about all the stuff that we're seeing coming into the U.S. from Mexico. She immediately got her eyes went wide, and she's like, don't buy any foods from Mexico, even the organic stuff. Now, here's what she told me, and I don't know if you've heard this or not. This was complete news to me, but what she was saying was that the chemicals that they're using, and they are chemicals in Mexico on the organic farms, are just as dangerous, but they're not the kind of chemicals that are detected by when they come into the U.S. and they're tested to whether or not they're organic or not. So, in other words, they've found new chemicals. It's kind of like steroids, I guess, right? You find the steroids that don't, they kind of go through the testing or whatever, and you don't worry, they don't get detected. She was saying that a lot of the chemicals, fertilizers and pesticides they're using are not detectable by our traditional standards of testing for organic food, so that what we're getting from Mexico is labeled as organic is you shouldn't be buying. Had you heard anything about that?
I haven't heard anything specifically about the foods from Mexico, but I do know that there is a big problem with the labeling of organic food, and there's some controversy going around, and that there was companies, I don't know the exact details, but they can label a product organic if it has a certain percentage of organic ingredients in it, so it doesn't have to be 100% organic. So there's a difference between something just saying organic and maybe it only has to be, like 70% organic, I think.
Yeah.
Does it say 100% organic, though? And some products will say 100% organic, and some will just say organic. So, that would be with like a mixed product instead of just like a produce or something, which is just one type of food. So, yeah, there is some problems there, but as time goes on, the demand for organic food is growing, the prices are going to go down,
yeah.
It's going to become more widespread. So hopefully we'll see some improvements in it.
Yeah. Yeah, and we've already seen, I think, a lot of that now. It used to be just astronomical for organic food. So now you see it even at local grocery stores that you normally never even carried organic, and now they're starting to, not just the specialty stores. You brought up a really great point also about, like, local farmer markets, and I think that that's also a really great point to bring out to everybody is about, kind of supporting those local farmers, because a lot of farmers are starting to make that transition over to organic produce, and they're giving that a try, but a lot of times they are the small farmer, and, they really kind of do need as much support as possible, and you can usually do a search, locally or ask around and see if there are farmers markets in your area, and I know that the ones that we go to near me, there are farmers that come from quite a ways away, as well as people that come to the farmers market from quite a ways away. I mean, they'll come, once every 2 weeks or so. They may travel a ways to get there, but they see the value in it. So so I like that point as well. Go ahead.
I was going to say your point there. A lot of people will say, they can't find, they can't find grass-fed meats, or they can't find organic produce, things like that. And that may be true in some areas. It may be hard to find, but do a search. I mean, if you really search for it, a lot of times you can find it. When I was in New Jersey, I didn't have a farm right near me that I could get raw grass-fed milk, grass-fed meats, but I found a farm in Lancaster that actually delivered to a co-op in South Jersey, and so we got all our grass-fed meats and raw grass-fed milk, dairy and cage-free eggs and everything from this. It was just tremendous quality. And now that I'm out in Colorado, I did the same thing. I mean, I couldn't find anything nearby, but luckily stumbled on the web. There's a farmer that brings it out from a farm like an hour away with, again, like a co-op type thing. And now, again, I'm able to get raw grass-fed dairy and eggs and good quality grass-fed bison and beef and, cage-free chicken and all kinds of really good quality stuff. And you just got to search for it sometimes.
Yeah. You know, I mean, people that got on the call thinking this was going to be all, you know, they didn't expect, like, we were going to be singing Kumbaya and sitting around the fire talking about organic stuff. But, I mean, to me, you know, and you put this is in your bio and this is in your site and this is in your program about the quality of the food that you put in you. And it really does come down to, I mean, no matter what your goals are, even if they are just about how your body looks, you know, the quality of food that you put in, I mean, what you're giving your body as far as fuel and what you're asking it to do in the gym is highly dependent upon the quality of the food that you're putting in your body. I mean, if people, like, if you're out there, you know, kind of plugging your ears like, oh, I'm sick of these, you know, bark-eating hippies talking about this stuff and they should be talking about how to do 1,000 crunches. think again. I mean, go to the extreme of, look, if we told you to go out and eat nothing but McDonald's for, you know, 6 meals a day, you know, how are you going to, or Fruit Loops 6 meals a day? I mean, think about what that's going to do to your body, both from a body fat standpoint as well as your training abilities. And I guess what Mike and I are saying is that put in quality fuel into your vehicle and you'll see the return on it. You'll see the return in the gym when you're training, and you'll see the return in the mirror when your body feels supported by, you know, everything that you're asking it to do in order to get down to super low levels of body fat. Hormonally, how it goes through the whole bio process of actually metabolizing that fat and getting rid of it and everything, and it's all very, very relevant. So don't plug your ears and tune us out just yet. But Mike, here's kind of more of a mainstream question that people are asking. You know, Greg from Janestown asks, I've been told that you must in capital letters, must eat 5 or 6 meals a day to burn the most fat, but can a person get by with just 3 meals a day and still see results that you want to achieve with fat loss, such as having a six-pack?
Yeah, that's a good question. Actually, I mean, for years, I've always suggested the more of the 5 to 6 meals a day approach as opposed to the 2 or 3 meals a day approach. But let's look at the big picture. What really matters is caloric balance. Now, there is something to be said for, you know, if you're eating 2,000 calorie meals, there's a hormonal aspect to that too. Again, you know, your body's got to handle a lot of food all at once. You know, your insulin could shoot through the roof, things like that. So I do prefer the grazing. You know, I like to eat 5 or 6 meals throughout the day, little smaller portions, even snacks in between, some, you know, a lot of that sometimes. I kind of eat when I'm hungry and listen to my body. You know, I don't try not to overeat. You know, if I feel satisfied, I stop. I mean, some common sense stuff there. But, yeah, in terms of the 5 or 6 versus 2 or 3 a day, big picture, caloric balance is what matters. But I found that people do seem to do better when they eat smaller meals throughout the day. And looking at the questions you gave me, there was actually some requests that people wanted some specific examples, like John from Australia, you know, wanted, Mike, what do you eat? You know, what's your typical day look like? And, like for me, I mean, I can say just what I've been eating this week. My typical breakfast, I get up, I make some eggs. Sometimes I'll make them over easy, or sometimes I'll make them scrambled. And I put a lot of veggies in them. I'll have 3 or 4 whole eggs. I say whole eggs because I'm a big proponent of whole eggs versus egg whites. You know, I have a whole article on that on my site. But basically all the nutrition's in the yolks. I mean, you know, almost there's tons of vitamins and minerals and antioxidants in the yolks. And if you're just eating the whites, you're not doing your body a favor. So I have eggs with a lot of veggies. This morning I had that with some grass-fed bison sausages that I found. I found some great-tasting sausages. I had some sprouted grain toast with some almond butter and a little bit of jam on there. A lot of times for a mid-meal, I make these batches where I mix yogurt and cottage cheese with nuts and berries. And it sounds kind of weird to some people, but I love it. And everybody that's tried it usually loves it too. I just make a big batch at the beginning of the week. I put in a container of yogurt, a container of cottage cheese, a bag of frozen mixed berries, and some nuts, maybe some almonds or pecans or walnuts. And mix it all up, and it's delicious, and it's really, I mean, super high in nutrients, got a nice balance of carbs and fat and protein, so that's a great example. A lot of times, like mid-afternoon when I might just need a snack, maybe a couple hard-boiled eggs, some veggie sticks, stuff like that, or a piece of fruit, maybe an apple with some almond butter or cashew butter or peanut butter, something like that. Good examples. Like I mentioned before, dinner, I like to stick to some kind of meat, whether it's beef, fish, or chicken, or something more exotic. I get some game meats sometimes, and veggies and a salad. And then they asked about what's a good like late-night snack. Again, late-night snack, I usually go a little lower on the carbs. You know, just some nuts, things like that are great. Cottage cheese is great. Just some ideas there. But I did want to throw that in because I saw some people wanted some examples too.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great way to really give people a visual of what, you know, they could possibly look at as well for their own diets. Hey, before we get into training now, are you open to see if there's anybody on the phone that has any questions?
Sure.
I kind of put you on the spot. Like, what are you going to say? No? Hold on 1 second. Let's see if anybody's out there. Okay, I've unmuted the line. And is there anybody that's on the phone tonight that has a question for Mike? Don't be shy. Okay, if nobody has a question, I'll go ahead and mute everybody again. And, Mike, it's kind of time now to dig into some of the training questions here. And then I've just got a few kind of that I thought were really good questions that were submitted that were kind of special situation type stuff. Let's talk about training. And I got a lot of questions in this. We can probably summarize this, just kind of lead it all into what is your recommendation for training. But the questions were kind of all over the board. I mean, Shane from the Dalles, besides doing hanging knee raises, weighted and dragon flags, does that sound like something you would know about?
I saw that, and yeah, I've never heard of dragon flags.
What are good lower ab exercises? I want to know what dragon flags are. So send me an email and let me know what the hell you're talking about. But he's trying to target lower ab exercises, and what are your favorite oblique exercises? So that's kind of specific to targeting areas of your of your abs. And there was another question here. Well, maybe I think somebody else had the same question, kind of like, how do I target the obliques? And this kind of brings up when it comes to carving out your midsection, specific to training your abs, what are your recommendations for how people should be training? Are you a proponent of doing these weighted type exercises, or are you a proponent of doing the 1,000 crunches a day kind of a thing?
All right, yeah, let me combine this. I see, so a couple of them are kind of similar, you know, what's the best oblique exercises, you know. So there's a lot of questions about targeting the abs. There was one about the what's the holy grail of ab exercises. So the kind of the big point I always like to make is that I'm very anti-targeting. Okay, so one of the biggest concepts that I try and talk about is that if everybody would be so much better off if they stopped trying to target their abs so much and just focused on, you know, big full body exercises. I mean, if you did nothing but squats, deadlifts, clean and presses, and pull-ups, I mean, you'd be so much better off than trying to do all this targeting. But, but people, regardless of those kind of concepts, people are going to want, they still want to know what's going to be the best ab exercise or whatever. Well, if I had to pick one, I like hanging leg raises, not hanging knee ups, but hanging leg raises, a full hanging leg raise with a pelvic curl up. So not, you know, keeping your pelvis straight, but actually curling it up. There's just a ton of resistance involved there. To be honest, most people cannot do it unless your abs are pretty strong already. You know, over the years, you know, I remember, you know, 10 years ago, I used to do a lot of ab training, and you get to a certain point where you've done so much ab training, I mean, your abs aren't going to get that much stronger, okay? You're not going to develop them that much more. And after a while, you've got to focus more on the big picture, Like I was saying, the big full body exercises, this is what changes your body, not just targeting your abs. You know, like I said, the clean and presses, the squats, the deadlifts, the presses, the rows, this kind of stuff. And a lot of that, you know, you get indirect ab work also. I mean, you're doing a front squat or an overhead squat or a one-arm snatch with a dumbbell or a kettlebell. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, involvement of your abs and your core and stabilizing your body during a lot of that. And you're burning a lot more calories, too, than if you're just doing crunches. So big picture, that stuff's most important.
You know, it's funny because, you know, you go to your website, and this was I don't know if this was a shocker for people or not, but you go to, like, an abs, quote-unquote, website. You go to your website, and you go to your bio, and there's a picture of you, quote-unquote, doing your favorite one of your favorite exercises, the deadlift. And this isn't something you expect to see when you go to a website called, you know, about a program called Truth About Abs. Here's my favorite exercise, deadlift. You know, I think that's an eye-opener for people that it really is about what you do for your entire body, not just the 1,000 crunches and stuff.
Yeah, and, you know, certainly, especially if you're starting out, like I said, you know, 10 years ago, I mean, I was doing more ab exercises than I do now, but my abs are much better now than they were then. And that's just a point that you really don't need to overdo all these, like, targeting your abs. But, you know, now I've gotten to the point where, all right, I did all that in the past. I mean, my abs got to a certain point, you know, where they're not going to get much stronger. They're not going to develop the muscle that much more. So really all that matters in how they look is your body fat percentage. And, you know, and I just maintain them. I mean, you know, if people would, you know, I've got this abs website and this famous book and, you know, well, the author, he only does like one or two ab exercises ever. You know, 99% of his workouts are full body workouts. And so people are kind of shocked at that. I mean, but to be honest, I just, you know, now all I do is I do hanging leg raises maybe once a week, you know, really, really hit them hard, make sure they got some resistance. You know, maybe I'll throw in a few other exercises here and there. But like I said, 99% of my workouts are focused on the stuff that really matters, the full body stuff. Now, getting back to what you were kind of asking, no, you know, you don't need to do hundreds or thousands of crunches. Somebody had also asked what's the best exercise to get the pump in your abs. Well, if you want a pump, you know, go ahead and do 200 crunches. You'll probably get a good pump. But I don't think your abs are going to ever look that much better because it's not going to help you lose body fat. And it's probably not going to help you develop the muscle that much more anyway, doing 200 crunches, because there's not enough resistance there. So another good ab exercise that can kind of help you work up to the hanging leg raise is a lying leg thrust. And that's kind of where you're laying down. You know, you can bring your legs up to where your legs and your upper body form a 90-degree angle. You thrust straight up, and then you bring your legs down about halfway down to the ground, so you're at like a 45-degree angle to the ground. Come back up, thrust up again, so you're kind of thrusting your hips off the ground. It's a great exercise. It's a lot easier to do, although it still has a decent amount of resistance, a lot more resistance than just a crunch. So that's another good one. I mean, if I just wanted to throw out a few examples.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. What about on the you know, kind of the fat burning side? You brought up sprinting. I mean, there's always the debates between low intensity cardio, high intensity cardio, interval training, things like that. One of the guys here had asked about you know, rocks from Manila, Philippines. I always love it that I get questions from like literally all over the world. I mean, like wherever the hell Xenia is from Lisa. I have no idea. You know. But rocks from Manila, Philippines, can you give us a sample interval training program that will melt away the stubborn gut, the lower belly flab, and tighten the abs? So there's an assumption there that you're a proponent of interval training, and this always seems to be the current day debate about what type of training besides doing the full body, you know, strength training and focusing on muscle like you're talking about. On the cardio side, what do you suggest?
Yeah. I do prefer a mix of intensity. So I think if you're always working at one intensity, you're not really doing the best thing for your body. So while I'm not a big fan of low intensity cardio, and all of us fitness professionals can argue both ways about that. You know, well, there's this study that shows this, and there's this study that shows this. You know, with low intensity versus interval training and so forth. I do think that you need a variety. So low intensity can be great sometimes, but I don't want to do it all the time. And interval training is great sometimes, but I think you should mix this all into your routine in a good way. Now, I do prefer myself, seeing better results with myself, better results with my clients, with going more on the high-intensity side. Again, it doesn't mean I don't include some low intensity in here and there, but personally, I don't like to just walk on a treadmill or an elliptical or an exercise bike. So the only low intensity exercise I get is like when I'm out hiking or something like that, that, you know, or playing a sport or something like that, that is more a leisure activity, as opposed to when I'm doing a workout, I want intensity, you know. So I do get my low intensity stuff, but that's usually just involved in one of my hobbies. For workouts, I like interval training and higher intensity, and, you know, I like to call it variable intensity instead of, you know, just necessarily interval training. A couple examples, I think I mentioned before, just going out to a field doing wind sprinting or going to a hill, if you have a hill nearby, and doing hill sprinting are two of my favorite forms of exercise. They're not, you know, I you can't really call them cardio, but they're actually strengthening your heart more a lot of times than just a low intensity cardio, because you're training your heart in a much wider range. Another good example is you can mix body weight exercises with you know, various other, for example, sometimes I just like to be at the gym and maybe you're doing jump roping. I love jump roping. I think it's a great form of exercise. So maybe you jump rope really hard for a minute, and in between, maybe you do some body weight squats, body weight lunges, and push-ups. Maybe just a little bit of each one. Then you're jump roping again. And then maybe you run over to the rowing machine, and you do 2 minutes really hard on the rowing machine. This kind of stuff's fun. When you mix up a workout like that, I think it's fun. There's a lot of variability there. You're doing a lot of different things for your body. And it's not just like, you're not just bored to tears like walking on a treadmill or on an exercise bike or something. So yeah. Those are a couple good ideas. I think it kind of helps people keep into it more mentally and, gives your body a little more of a challenge.
Yeah, and you know, that mental part is so much a factor in them, because a lot of people just give up on their training, whether it gets too boring or whether it just becomes more of a hassle than it is that they're seeing the results and everything. They start weighing that out mentally, and, you know, it's good to have something that kind of keeps you motivated and keeps you going and everything.
Yeah. And another good point there is the mind-muscle connection and being into your exercise mentally, like we said, is so important. Think about these two scenarios. I've spent a lot of time in gyms for almost 20 years, and here's what I see a lot. A lot of people come in, they're on that treadmill, they're on that exercise bike, or they're on that elliptical. Those are the three things that I never use, to be honest. But again, you see people on there, and they're reading a magazine, or they're watching the TVs that are built into those machines in a lot of the gyms nowadays. Okay, so you're not focusing on the exercise. You're reading or you're watching TV. Your mind's not in it at all. You may be burning a couple extra calories, but there's not that connection. Your mind, you know, with the exercise, with your muscles, with what's going on in your body. And I think it's almost worthless. So that's just my opinion. So I just wanted to point that out.
Wow, you are such a rebel. But not many people even bring up the mind-muscle connection, and I'm glad you did. I've talked about this with a lot of my subscribers in the past too. One of the things that I just kind of drive that home for everybody, one of the things I do with my intervals is I also kind of focus on tensing up my stomach. Now, that doesn't mean because I'll use the treadmill as part of my intervals in some certain stages and everything, and when I'm on there, I don't put on the TV that's in front of me. I may listen to music or something like that, but what I do is I focus on tensing up my midsection, because I have to mentally focus on doing that. Otherwise, if you're zoning out, you can't kind of tense up your muscles at the same time, and that kind of helps me draw in that mind-muscle connection as well. But great stuff. Let's go into some of the kind of specialty stuff here. Jim from Denver, I think, brings up a pretty typical type of question. 44 years old and exercise regularly 3 to 4 times a week, and I'm very careful about what I eat. I only have beef once a week, and the remainder of the days I eat fish, chicken, turkey, buffalo, or ostrich. So here's a guy who's pretty advanced in you know, the whole nutrition thing, I think. I initially lost 55 pounds. I have seen significant muscle growth and continue to improve in most areas of my physique. However, I'm still loose around the lower back, just below the kidneys. This area around my entire body has been very stubborn in giving up the fat. Can you suggest some exercises or perhaps some tweaks in my diet that may help to reduce this flab and get rid of this flabbiness once and for all? You know, this question kind of ties into the other question that we had about the guy that was seeing, you know, particularly guys that are over 40, over 50, that are also starting to see some hormonal changes in their body, and they start seeing that fat deposited in different areas. And like you said, that's different for different people. A lot of guys get saggy breasts when they get older. They start to see kind of some saddlebags coming on the side of their belt. So when it comes to targeting these trouble spots, and people come to you as a client and say, you know, I really want to get rid of my sagging breasts. I'm talking guys or women, you know, whatever it may be. you know, what are your tips for them when they're trying to spot target areas that, you know, especially if they've seen progress, but here we are again, you know, we're back at the sticking point, or that one area that just jumps out at them when they're looking at the mirror, like, how the hell do I get rid of that?
Yeah. Well, again, this kind of all gets back to the big picture we've been talking about, but, you know, if you've got some extra fat on your obliques or on your stomach or on your chest, I mean, doing exercises that target those areas isn't going to get rid of it. So we need to, again, get back to the bigger picture. And, you know, I always try and shock people. I say, you know, because, say, you know, I'll have a client at the gym and they're I want to get rid of these love handles, and they're doing, like, you know, a million side bends, you know, and it's the way everybody thinks. I mean, it's your only association is, well, you've got this spot, so I'm going to try and work on that spot. But I say, well, you know, all right, if you had 20 minutes to work out, you could sit here and do 20 minutes of side bends, and let's say let's just throw out some random numbers. I'm not even saying these are anywhere close to accurate, but let's say you burned 400 calories. And then, now, what if you did something else in that 20 minutes, and instead you did 20 minutes of squatting? Now, you know, you used some of the biggest muscle groups in your body. Squats are known to use the most muscle groups in your body. You might have burned 1,000 calories versus that 400. Plus, you probably got a whole different thing going on in your body with the metabolic response and what we've been talking about with the hormonal response. There's a lot more stuff going on there. And the results, I mean, again, this is looking at the big picture. The results are going to be a lot different. You know, the squats are going to change your entire body and get rid of body fat deposits throughout your entire body. That 20 minutes of side bends that you did isn't going to do much. You just barely burned a little bit of calories, and you worked your oblique muscles. So, and that's about it. So that's, again, why I always look more of this at a bigger picture when you have these kind of situations where somebody wants to spot reduce somewhere. And you know, he mentioned, I only have beef once a week, and the remainder of days eat fish, chicken, turkey, buffalo, ostrich. Those are all great, you know, buffalo, ostrich. I love those types of meat. But he almost acts like he sounds like beef is a bad thing. You know, I only have beef once a week. Again, like, that's one of my favorite things to eat, as long as it's a healthy form of beef, you know, the grass-fed beefs that I get. So just trying to look at things a little differently here.
Yeah.
But, you know, looking at the overall picture of, you know, what's the intensity and the types of exercises you're doing for your whole body, and what's your overall caloric balance?
Yeah. Yeah, good points. This is kind of a, you know, this question always seems to pop up anytime we start talking about fat loss. But I've got to bring it up because everybody, this is another one of those things that is thrown out there. It's kind of kicked around and there's a lot of debate over. I want to get your perspective on it. Paul from Sydney, Australia asks, is it true that during my morning cardio session, if I do it on an empty stomach and then not consume any meals until an hour after my workout, or that I should be doing it this way when trying to get lean? You know, I mean, that's been kicked around so many times. What's your take on morning cardio on an empty stomach? And specifically, Paul even adds in there not consuming any meals until an hour after that workout.
Yeah, well, I think we actually disagree on this. And again, this is one of those topics, like you said, that gets, you know, fitness professionals will argue about this and cite all kinds of different you know, scientific reasons why. Well, cardio on an empty stomach, you're going to burn a higher percentage of fat. And then, you know, the opponents to that will say, well, what really matters is your overall daily caloric balance anyway, so it doesn't matter that you burned a higher percentage of fat. So my point on this is that everyone's an individual, and everyone needs to test. You know, if they want to know what the answer to this is, I don't think there is a definite answer. I think you need to test everything individually. Some people may think this is, you know, this is the holy grail. This is great. You know, I do morning cardio on an empty stomach and I'm just burning the fat away like crazy. Other people, you know, so this is real life for me, my experience and a few people I know that have tried it. It kind of backfired. For me, what I noticed was I lost muscle really quick when I started doing, you know, 3 or 4 days a week of cardio in the morning on an empty stomach. Because again, you know, when you wake up in the morning, your body, you know, hasn't had food for, let's say, 8 or 10 or 12 hours, whenever the last time you ate before you went to bed. So your body is needs amino acids for certain bodily functions. And you don't have any immediate protein in your stomach that it's digesting. It's going to need to still get those amino acids from something. So it'll break down muscle tissue to get those amino acids for other, you know, organs that it need, you know, that need it for functioning. So, you know, there's something to be said there. Again, personally, I noticed that I lost muscle, which then kind of made it harder to lose any more body fat. I did it for a couple months straight, and I really wanted to experiment with it and see if it worked for me. My personal story was it didn't really work for me. A couple of people I know, it didn't really work for them either. I do remember one of my clients said that she thought it did really work for her. So she thought she was getting great results with it. So my point of this is we can argue all we want about the science of why one is right and the other is wrong or vice versa. But everyone, I think, just needs to test it for themselves and see if it works for them or not.
Yeah. Yeah, really, I mean, we get so deep into the template programs about how one size kind of fits all and lose sight of the bio-individuality that people have. And, I mean, people can look at it like you can look around. You just go to the mall and look around, and you see the different shapes of people, the different sizes of people. I mean, everybody is different, and what works for one person may not work for another person. You know, Atkins might work for someone, and it doesn't work for another. I mean, so you've got to really take everything and experiment with it, and whether it's diet or whether it's training, because it's not just about what's going to work specifically on the metabolic process in your body, but also what works with your time constraints, your lifestyle, your challenges, the support system that you have. I mean, all these different things that really are factors in your everyday life. So, good point.
Yeah.
I have to bring. I'll make this the last question, but I've got to bring it up because you know, anytime you talk about fat loss, you have to talk about supplements. Shane from the Gold Coast, Australia. I'm taking several types of supplements starting from whey protein, branched-chain amino acids, glutamine, pre-workout amplifier, carbohydrates, post-workout, multivitamins and fish oil tablets. I want to gain lean muscle mass. I'm currently 18. I have an athletic build. I'm working workout five times a week. I've read the bonus article about the seven top supplements. I think he's referring to somebody else's article that I've got in there. However, I don't know what supplements are best for me. I don't have the money to keep this up. Please help. What are the best ones for me? Let's kind of put this into more of the fat loss realm, because when people are just they're just blasted with ad after ad of lipos suck, you know, viral mechanics X pill, pop this thing and burn the body fat. What do you recommend to people, if any, when it comes to supplementing for? I mean, I'd like to. He put it in the form of building muscle, but I mean, you can take it anywhere you want to when it comes to supplementation. But you know, we're talking about burning body fat. So, when it comes to your advice for your clients about supplementing, I mean, what's your bottom line advice?
Yeah, well, one thing I noticed here is that Shane seems to think that he needs supplements. He seems to think that he won't get results without them, and I see that a lot. And people, you know, most people are kind of brainwashed. There's so much marketing for supplements. The magazines, you know, every other page has huge advertisements for supplements, and so you get to thinking that you can't get results without supplements. All your body needs is natural foods. I mean, you can get everything you need from food. One of the biggest points I make is that we don't need supplements. I mean, okay, if you've got a lot of extra money and want to buy some supplements, there are a few maybe that you know are decent, but it's few and far between a lot of times these days. And so do we need them or not? No, we don't need them. You can get great results without any supplements at all, as long as you eat right and you're eating quality foods like we talked about. I mean, a lot of people would be so much better off, and we talked about the price of food. Supplements are super expensive. I mean, everybody would be so much better off investing that money in higher quality food that you would have spent on supplements. I mean, if you're spending, some of these canisters of powders can be $50 each. You know, if you use two of them a month, that's $100 a month. Use that $100 to buy better quality food instead. You'd be much better off. And so he mentions here, you know, I don't have money to keep this up. Well, then don't. Just eat healthy, train hard, and to be honest, I used to use a lot of supplements in my late teen years, my early 20s. I thought they were necessary. I thought I wouldn't get results without them. To be honest, I probably threw away thousands of dollars. They never really helped anything. If they help anything, it's the placebo effect. You think you're taking something powerful, so everybody knows about the placebo effect. Your mind thinks you're taking in something powerful that's going to help you build muscle or lose fat or something. So it might actually help a little bit, but it's probably more due to the placebo effect than whatever that product actually contains. Training hard, eating right, everything we've talked about in this entire call is a lot more important than taking supplements. People are going to argue with me, but think about maybe what's behind it. Do they have a financial reason behind it why they're arguing for supplements? If you read the magazines, most of their revenue comes from advertising for supplements. So, you know, you can figure out why they're recommending them is so important. So just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, great point. I mean, I really like the reinvestment approach that you take to it. And, focusing, find out where your priorities are. And again, if you're complaining about the price of organic stuff, the $100 that you spend on, I won't name any brand names, but yeah, I mean, you really can spend that much money on supplements that you were brainwashed into thinking that that steroid juice pro in the magazine actually helped them get to that kind of a body. So reinvesting that money in better quality food, great stuff. Mike, I think that's we've gone way over time here, but I really appreciate you taking the time with us today. Any kind of parting advice? I mean, if you were to tell people, if they said, my goal is to just burn body fat to the point where I get done 6 legs, what would be your number one tip? I think of everything that we've talked about tonight, all the points that we've gone over in the last over an hour now, what would you say is the number one tip, the first action item that you would suggest to everybody if their goal is to really make a change and if their goal is to burn body fat?
Sure. Well, one of the biggest things I can suggest is set a specific goal, write it down, and go after achieving that. Make sure it's realistic. And go, you know, again, we're kind of getting away from all the little details about training and nutrition here, but set a goal. So if you want, and you know what, always strive for, you know, always make new goals as time goes on. And I'm always trying to do, you know, after a while you kind of get to your, you know, maybe you've achieved something, you know, you got to a certain strength level on a certain lift, whatever. Well, now set something new. I'm always doing something new, like, you know, maybe this month I'll say, all right, I'm going to give myself 5 weeks and I want to increase this certain exercise by 40 pounds or something like that. I make, you know, write down something specific. And, you know, when you're training and you've got your mind into a goal that you set and you wrote down and you have a time deadline to achieve it, you're so much more likely to achieve it. And if you're always kind of going for different things, you're always making progress on something, and it's really big over time, and you can just make so much. And I make it fun, you know, like my goals right now, you know, are beyond fat loss, because I don't really need to lose body fat at this time. If I did, I would, you know, I'd set a weight goal that I wanted to get down to or something. But a lot of times I'm just going for something, like I said, if I'm deadlifting 350 pounds, I'll say, well, on this date, 5 weeks from now, I want to be doing 385, or I'm doing 13 pull-ups, you know, and this type of pull-up, you know, I want to be able to do 18 after 5 weeks or whatever. Or, you know, one of the ones I did recently was handstand push-ups, and I wanted to be able to do, you know, like 15 handstand push-ups or something. So I set a goal, set a date, and go for it. So same thing goes on fat loss, muscle building, strength in specific lifts. But really important to not just be going at blindly, just randomly doing things, but really, you know, set some specific goals and go for them.
Yeah, great stuff. And you're right, this isn't just about what exercises you do and what you're actually putting in your mouth, but, I mean, we've talked about mind-muscle connection, and goal setting is such a huge aspect of that, and being realistic about it. Great stuff, Mike. Mike, again, I really appreciate you taking the time to spend some time with us tonight, and really incredible information. Everybody that's out there, I mean, make sure you grab this this recording and go ahead and listen to it over again. You're going to find things that you didn't hear the first time, so go through it, listen to it over and over again, and be sure to go over and check out Mike's bio. Just go to undergroundbodybuildingtips.com and go ahead and check out the trainer section there. You'll see Mike there prominently displayed, and you'll go ahead and check out his bio and check out his program there. Good stuff. Mike, once again, thanks a lot, man.
All right, thanks, Jeff.
Yep. And everybody else, until the next Underground Bodybuilding Secrets session, train hard and stay committed.